Welcome to the Parental Thriving Podcast. I am your host, Melissa Bujeya, certified positive discipline educator, parental coach, and down and dirty in this journey with my own two preteens and young child. If you are looking to grow as a parent, if you want to transform your relationship with your children, this is the place to go. Each week, I bring you a solo show or an interview, and I am honored to share with you my passion and have you listen in. If you do not want to miss what is happening for your parents, please join my mailing list on www.parentalthrivingmalta.com. I love hearing from my listeners, so feel free to drop me a line on melissa@parentalthrivingmalta.com. And it would be great if you share these episodes with your friends. Good morning, and I hope you are having a good week. And today I am going to talk to you about the second set of questions which many of you breastfeeding parents have asked me, which include nighttime weaning, sleep rest association, breastfeeding and older children, exclusively pumping and working, and managing low milk supply. So let us start with breastfeeding and the older child. So when we have siblings and we have started breastfeeding, when we are having, we have a newborn and we have an older child, it can be a bit hectic, especially if those children are toddlers. So I'm going to discuss first the younger child and also the older child. So when we have the younger child, even before we actually have the baby and start breastfeeding, it's a good idea to tell, to get the pictures of when your little one was younger, and tell them stories through the pictures that they were having also, that they have, about how it was, how they wanted to feed all the time, how they needed so much attention. So making them aware that the new baby will be needing a lot of attention, and that would help them to accept it more easily. And after the baby is born, you can still carry on with these stories and showing them the photos while you are actually breastfeeding. Other things that are very useful when you have a younger child is that you ask them to help you by bringing you nappies, bringing you water for you to drink. I don't know, talking to the baby, singing to the baby while they're crying. So get them involved as much as possible helps to make them feel more useful and less reactive to the baby. You can also have a kind of as a nursing box, I call it. Where the child will have things specifically which come out when you are breastfeeding the baby. So there might be blocks, there might be colors and coloring books, puzzles, I don't know. If you have a play kitchen, you can play kitchen together, because you can stay sitting down and the older child is obviously the chef and they are preparing food for you. Games like I Spy and Simon Says can be very good for these children. Reading books, you know. So there are a lot of things that we can do with the older child while we are breastfeeding the infant. And having that infant in a sling, if you feel comfortable to do so, would be so helpful, because you will have one or two hands free and you can interact more with your older child about it. But also always empathize with their feelings. So maybe it is very common that you might be just about to start playing with your older child and the newborn wakes up and starts crying, and it's okay to go, oh no, Maya woke up again, we were just about to play, isn't that really bad timing, you know. Which is so upsetting, how much your sister wakes up, how often she wakes up and needs you. It is so frustrating that I have to stop again from playing with you. So giving words to the feelings that they might be feeling will help them to feel understood, and that helps so much as well. If we have older children as in 9 years old and teenagers and preteens, teenagers, you know, that can bring a whole different ways of how we look at breastfeeding. And a lot of parents might feel that they shouldn't be breastfeeding in front of the older children, or they might think that they are going to be embarrassed about it. And I tell you, don't feel embarrassed, and don't hide it from the older child, because after all, we are trying to normalize breastfeeding, and so there is nothing wrong with it at all. You can explain to the older child what's going to happen again prior to the baby comes, so that they are aware of how this works. You know, hey, you know, when baby is born, I will be breastfeeding. You've never seen anyone breastfeeding after. But you did breastfeed when you were younger, you know, so this is how it's going to look like. And if you have any questions or need anything, just let me know. So having these conversations with the children is so very important, because communication is key. We need to help them understand, and we also need to validate how they are feeling. So if your older child is, maybe you have a teen and they are feeling uncomfortable with you feeding in front of them, you know, just take some time when you are not breastfeeding, and talk to your child and ask them how they are feeling, what is that is bothering them, and so on and so forth. And maybe you can reach an agreement where, for example, you decide that every time you are going to breastfeed, you are going to tell your child. So it's not you that is going away from the room, but you are informing your older child, hey, heads up, I'm going to be breastfeeding in a few minutes. Just in case you don't feel comfortable, you can leave the room. But always, always, you know, make it clear that this is something normal. It's fine if they don't feel comfortable, but that doesn't mean that you need to hide, but they can leave the room. So yes, always answer questions truthfully and age appropriately. Validate their feelings and help them understand what is happening and what you are doing. So that is all about breastfeeding and having other children. So now I'm going to go to the hottest topic about night weaning and this Breast Sleep Association. So first of all, I want to make it very clear that it is developmentally appropriate for children to wake up 1-3 times a night for a year and even beyond that. So it is developmentally appropriate, and it is fine. And as long as you are happy with it, please carry on breastfeeding at night. There is nothing wrong with it. It is okay to comfort suck your baby at night. It is okay to give the breast for the children to go to sleep with. There is nothing wrong with it. It is age developmentally appropriate. It is age appropriate, and it is something which helps to build trust, something another thing that helps bring trust and communication between children and parents. So the children that actually sleep through the night is the exception and not the rule. The majority of the children wake up several times a night for more than 1 year, for up to 3 years. It's quite normal for them to be waking up. Okay, so the Sleep Breast Association also isn't bad, but it's actually normal. Like, actually, we ourselves, might read a book before going to bed, or maybe we can be watching some television or having a cup of coffee, or there are various ways which we adults use to help us go to sleep before we go to sleep. And the Breast Association is the same thing. It is ways where which infants use to help them relax and be able to fall asleep. So there is again nothing wrong with it. And they will get out of it. It's natural when they are ready, when they are developmentally ready, they will let go of that Breast Sleep Association. So again, I just wanted to make it very clear that there is nothing wrong with feeding the baby or giving the breast to the baby or your toddler to go to sleep. And as long as you are both happy, just keep on doing it. No matter what other people say. Now, the issue usually comes when, for whatever reason, we are not really ready, not really wanting to carry on to do this, and would rather stop feeding for the night. So the issue isn't again good versus bad. There isn't that issue. It's all good, and it's all what you need, what you or your infant needs. It is never about society, please. It is never about expectations from family members or friends and so on and so forth. It is what you need. So if you feel the need to stop feeding or comfort sucking your child at night, please go ahead and do so. It is not easy, obviously, because the child is not ready to do so. But it is also much worse if we carry on doing it when we are not happy to do it anymore. So, how do we go about it? First of all, I always start with stories. Stories are how children make sense of this world, whether they are 1 year old, whether they are 12 year old, whether they are teenagers, and even if they are younger. Okay, so while we might not feel that they are understanding us, they do understand quite a lot more than we think. So stories about animals usually work best rather than other humans. So stories of how baby bear is mommy baby bear mommy bear sorry is now ready to stop giving the breast to the baby, but that baby bear is afraid that he won't be able to sleep and so on. So put in the story, unless you find books, I've never checked myself so I can say, but put in the story as many emotions as you think your baby might be feeling, and even that you might be feeling, because while you might be ready to wean, it doesn't mean that there isn't that regret there, that guilt, that fear. So put in the emotions of both mother and child as much as possible, but always, obviously, it ends with the ending that the baby found that he can sleep without the breast, and the mother found that they can find different ways how to comfort and be happy together. So stories, always start with stories. Then there is a kind of three, four steps, I call them. So at the moment we are putting the baby to sleep with the breast, okay? The next step would be to put the baby to s nearly to sleep with the breast. So when they are practically dozing off, we take off the breast, okay? Once they are happy doing that and they get used to it, then we are going to help them relax. And we are going to give them the breast till they are relaxed, and then we are taking off the breast. And once they are happy with that, then we are taking the breast away completely. This can be a matter of a few days, a few weeks, and even a few months. It depends how quickly and how slowly you want to do it, or if you are happy to wait and kind of start with the first step, but let the baby lead you, So there are various ways. So again, it will be a matter of you are doing these four steps. So currently you are breastfeeding them to sleep, and now you're going to start them off with feeding them till they are nearly asleep, and then till they are relaxed, and then you take off the breast. And with these steps, you are going either to go with you, with what you want, right? So you are deciding that after a week of doing this, you will move to the next step. Or else you decide to let the child lead you. So you are ready to wean, but you are not in such a rush. So you will let the child take their time to go from one step to the next. What I was going to say next. Oh yes, it would help if you are going through this process to obviously put them in the bed where they will be start sleeping, where you can lay down next to them even during nap times. So this is something which it might be more helpful if you do it for both naps and bedtime. Personally, myself, I had started with naps. So what happened was I wanted them to start sleeping in their own bed. It wasn't an issue exactly of weaning them from the breast, but more of having them in their own bed. So for nap times, we started having the nap in their bed. And eventually I decided also to take off the breast. And as we said, I was slightly doing, stopping a bit and starting a bit, but letting the child lead me as much as possible. Things that also help, especially if you are weaning from the breast with a 1-year-old plus child, is to give them a time limit. That was my biggest tool for me with my children. So I would tell them, for example, you have only 5 minutes on the breast, and then we will let it go. And the 5 minutes, because obviously children have no concept of time, right? So the 5 minutes can be actually 15 minutes. It can be just a few seconds. It will depend from you. And also what is important is when you are doing these things, these negotiations, you also take into consideration your child a lot, in the sense that if you know that you had a long day today and your child is overstimulated, or maybe they didn't have enough movement, you know that your child is not going to sleep just as easily without the breast. So you'll still go through this process of you have only 5 minutes, but the 5 minutes is going to be much longer than the actual 5 minutes, obviously, and you compensate like that. And what I would do is also do a kind of countdown. So we're going to have 5 minutes, and then there's 4 minutes left, and eventually 3 minutes, and so on and so forth. And that helps, again, the children to be more ready. Doing these steps does not mean that there will be no crying. This is very important, because it doesn't mean that there will be no crying, but it does mean that you are taking more time and making more effort to honor your needs and also that of your child. And I think I always say this, unless you are really ready to stop the breast, it's not going to happen. Because what happens is, we start with saying, okay, I'm done, I want to stop the breast. And then as soon as the baby starts crying a lot, so okay, and today I am tired, I'm going to give him the breast because I don't feel like the crying today, right? And that undermines all our efforts that we have been doing. So please make sure that you are ready. And once you decided, you have to follow through. You can't say, because today I'm tired, or because today, I don't know, there's something going on, I will give them the breast because I want them to sleep quickly. No, you have decided that you are going to wean from the breast, and you are going to follow through with that. if you are not able to do it alone, if you feel that you are not able to do it alone, please feel free to contact a sleep coach. But beware of the types of the sleep coaches that there are. I mean, there are two schools of thought about weaning, okay? So there is what we call the cry it out method, which I unfortunately cannot endorse. I'm sorry. I try as much as possible not to be judgmental, but it is something which I definitely cannot endorse, because how do I explain it? As we said earlier, taking the breast for comfort and for the night is developmentally appropriate and helps them to relax and sleep. Now, if we decide to take that away and leave them alone in a room, and we're not even there, and they have no idea, they are not yet developmentally ready to actually understand that somebody can leave and come back again. We have to remember that. So at this point, the children, as soon as they don't see us, they believe that we've disappeared and we are not coming back at all. Eventually, as they are growing older, they know that something can disappear and come back. And we do these games of peekaboo to help them understand that, right? Now, the children, especially when they are younger, they don't understand that completely. And when we are doing this cry it out method, the children are feeling in a stressful situation because they believe they are left completely alone and they have no one and nothing to help them. And the stress levels get so high, and usually they will sleep eventually, but it is more a sleep of exhaustion and of giving up that anyone will ever come to comfort them. And so for me, that is something that breaks my heart and I can't really endorse it. But whatever works for you, you have to do that. The other method is obviously that we are taking it slowly. So it is where maybe the mother is there or the father is there, but they're not giving them the breast, but they might be holding them, they might not, but they might be tapping them on the back in the crib, whatever. But the parents are there with them and they are enduring with them the pain and understanding and being empathetic with their children. So you have to see what feels right for you and your family always, always. Whatever decision we take with our children, it has to feel right for us, no matter what others say. So yes, I think that is all about nights weaning and all that. So the next one I'm going to tackle, the next question was about managing low milk supply. So again, let's get a reality check first. And low milk supply, actual low milk supply, is maybe like 1% in the whole world population that actually exists. So there are various reasons why a mother might have a low milk supply. And these will include that the baby is not removing enough milk from the breast because they are not latching properly, or they have timed feeds from the parents. They might have a tongue tie or other issues which are not helping the baby maintain a good latch, or that they can transfer the milk properly. Formula use, unfortunately, does also get us into the habit of a low milk supply, because we find that people will start with maybe one bottle, but then they might not be pumping that misfeed, and eventually the one bottle, and they start increasing, and eventually obviously the milk keeps going down. So that might also be a reason why. Contraception also can lead to a low milk supply. Menstruation, if you get your period, it can lead for a few days of low milk supply before and the first 3 days. Smoking can lead to a low milk supply. And medical problems in the mother can also lead to a low milk supply, like PCOS and hypothyroidism and diabetes and hormonal imbalances, among many others. So if you are experiencing actual low milk supply, it is important to check with your healthcare professional and lactation consultant to find the root cause. Now, when a mother actually suffers from low milk supply, most of these which I mentioned can therefore resolve itself. Like if the baby doesn't have a good latch, then we can help with the latch so that the baby is removing enough milk. If a mother is doing timed feedings, we as lactation professionals will explain to the parents that this is not how it should be and help them to regain their supply and to feed on demand. If there is a tongue tie, there is the possibility that you can snip it off so that your baby can feed better. Other issues obviously will need other interventions. You might decide to stop a contraceptive till you are breastfeeding and your supply will come back. You might decide to stop smoking. You might decide to limit formula milk. So there are a lot of things that you can do about most of the reasons why there is low milk supply. But there are also a few things. Sorry, my birds are making a lot of noise. When they hear me talk, they want to talk back to me somehow. And sometimes it feels like I am making a competition with who is talking most. Anyway, so going back, so how do we manage a low milk supply? So the idea is that we are keeping the supply stable, right? So feeding often is important, because the more we feed, the more we are telling the body to make milk. And that can not possibly increase supply in your case, but it will make sure that your supply remains stable. Having a healthy diet and drinking enough water and doing enough movement and sleeping enough, these basic self-care basically is something which is very important to anyone really. But if you need to manage your low milk supply, make sure that you are keeping it in balance, then it is even more important for you to make sure that you are getting all these things. You might want to pump to maintain your supply. You might want to pump in between feedings to help also keep the supply more stable. While you are feeding your baby, it could also help with breast compression, where you are compressing the breast so that more milk comes out. And sometimes mothers can also take medication. In Malta, that would be Motilium, and it has to be taken with the prescription from a doctor, but it is something that usually also increases supply. There are other medications also around the world, but the most common in Malta is Motilium. So really and truly, the first step with low milk supply, if you think you have a low milk supply, first you need to see a professional to determine if you actually have a low milk supply and from where it is coming, that milk supply. Then if it is definitely a milk supply and there is nothing, if you are doing everything right and there's nothing more that you can improve upon, then you are only managing to make sure that you are keeping your supply stable by feeding often and or pumping, maintaining your self-care, and if need be, if you feel this is a possibility, also taking medication, but medication is always the last resort, of course. So that is a bit on low milk supply management. Now, what is left? Okay, so exclusive pumping and work, and last one is reflux. So when we are exclusively pumping and we are going to back to work, it is really not much different from being at home. So if at home we are pumping 8 times in 24 hours to maintain our supply, then the same is going to apply when we are at work. So if you would normally be pumping twice in the time that you are at work, then you need to pump that amount, right? There can be a bit of leeway here and there. There is this website which I really recommend to any exclusive pumping parents, which is exclusivepumping.com. She's a lactation consultant and has so much resources for an exclusive pumping mother, which I think would be really helpful. The first thing we need to do when we are going back to work and we are exclusive pumping is that we are talking to our employer. The earlier, the better. We are letting them know what our needs are, and we are also giving them how we can still make sure that we are giving our utmost at work while pumping. Because that is sometimes the biggest obstacle, really, that they feel that you might be spending too much time pumping and not enough at work. But especially if they can give you a private space, then you can have a hands-free pumping bra, so that you can still work on your computer, answering phones, whatever. So if you are working in an office environment, obviously. I'm going to talk as if you are working in an office environment, because obviously when you are not, there are a lot of other option differences which actually you need to tackle them, especially for your case. And I definitely, you can't go through that all. So I'm going to be talking here as if you are exclusively pumping from an office environment. If you are not and you need more help, please do contact me and we will do something tailor-made exactly for you. Going back to, as we said, we speak to our employer as early as possible, tell them of our needs, give them a working plan of how this can work for you and them. And having a place where you are going to pump. Making sure, maybe have a checklist of all the things that you need. You'll need the pump, you might need the pumping bra, maybe you want to take it, not wearing it, but taking it with you. You might need ice packs and an ice box where you can put the milk if you don't have a fridge where you can keep it. So there are all these things which a checklist can be helpful in this case to make sure that you don't forget anything. And pumping at the same time as when you are at home is helpful, but not always necessary. So it is more a matter for us when it comes to milk supply. It's not exactly the time that we pump, but the amount of times we pump. So if we normally pump 8 times in 24 hours, what is important is that we are still doing that when we go back to work. Now, whether we pump all half the milk at work, or we make sure that we're pumping more before work and after work, and maybe just once during the working hour, our working hours, that is something that is that you will need to see if it works for you and if it's better for you. In my case, when I had my first child, I was working in an office, and I pumped 3 times a day at the office. And basically, you know, it worked easier that way, because then when I got home, I could spend time with my child rather than having to pump the milk that I didn't do during my working hours. But again, it is something really personal that you have to see what would work best for you. So if it feels like you can go to work, pump only once, and then pump extra in the morning and the evening, please do so. There are no hard rules, except that if you normally pump 8 times, then it still has to be 8 times to maintain your supply. Because really, more really and truly, once you are exclusively pumping and you've been doing it for a while, it is really a matter, like any other mother going back to work, of maintaining your supply while you are at work and how that can work out. So there is nothing much more really that I can add than speaking to your employer, having a space where to pump that feels appropriate, and having a plan of how you will manage working while pumping, so that your employer is not feeling like you are taking too much time from your work and not giving your best. Okay, and as I said, the website, which is really helpful for pumping mothers, is exclusivepumping.com. Now, the last one is reflux, and we had a couple of parents talking about reflux currently in the group Breastfeeding Matters. So, reflux is an acid, okay, when we get acid in our stomachs and goes up and it feels horrible, obviously, reflux is the same, but in infants. Now, why does that happen? It is actually, studies show that breastfed infants actually suffer less from it than formula-fed infants, but they still suffer, and there are different severities as well in it. So it doesn't mean that because you are breastfeeding, you won't get reflux, and it doesn't mean that it will always be mild. I've had clients which were exclusively breastfeeding, and their babies were in so much pain, it always breaks my heart. And, you know, so there's that. Now, why would a baby suffer from reflux? So there is something which we say, like, we don't really know, but there are also reasons why it can be. So it is important if you are seeing that your baby is, okay, so let me start with how do we know if our baby does have reflux. Okay, so normally we would know that because they might be refusing feeds, they might be throwing a lot, though not always. They might not be gaining enough weight or not gaining weight at all. They might have blood in the bowels. They can have green or yellow spit. They can have a bad breath. They are arching their back and the neck to get rid of the pain a lot. They can be very much congested, inconsolable. So no matter what you do, they are likely crying or unhappy for a good portion of the day. And there was something else. Sometimes they might have breathing problems. Okay. So when we are seeing any of these, it is good that we check it out with a healthcare provider. Also, it is important because reflux can be a side product, so to speak, of something else, like tongue tie, allergies, immature muscle control, And oversupply, milk oversupply can end up with babies having reflux. Now, how do we manage? How do we help a reflux baby, right? So once we have determined the cause, if it is a tongue tie, again, we can snip the tongue tie. If it is allergies, then we can take the things that are, our baby is allergic to away from our diet. If we are doing this elimination diet, it is important to remember that it will take at least 8 weeks for it to see, to clear from your, 4 weeks to clear from your system, and a further 4 weeks to clear from the baby's system completely. Also, if there is a slip up, so let's say your child has a dairy intolerance or allergy, and you need to get dairy off your diet. So if you've been 3 weeks without any dairy, but you were maybe you weren't thinking properly, or maybe you were out and about and you forgot to ask them if this product has dairy in it, and you took dairy, you are going nearly back to square one. Unfortunately, you'll have to start not completely from the beginning, but near enough, unfortunately, so the process can be long. Also, especially when it comes to dairy, it is important to understand that dairy is in so many things. So it's not a matter of cutting off cheese, yogurt, and milk. It's a matter of checking every single item that you are consuming, because dairy can be in wine, in soap, in bread, and in so many other things. So you'd really need to be aware of that, okay? And elimination diet is not easy, but it is definitely possible. If the baby maybe is premature and they have still a mature muscle control, that will come with time and with some help. And obviously, if you have an oversupply, you can regulate it as well. You can help to regulate the supply. But maybe you don't have any reason why the baby is suffering from reflux, and this is just something that unfortunately is happen, which happens to many children. And what can we do to help our child? So first of all, you have to help the baby to relax. When we have a reflux baby, it is very hard for a mother to relax. And when that happens, the baby automatically is not going to be relaxed. It's already hard for the baby to be relaxed, but if the mother is also anxious and stressed, that's going to make it even harder. And that will make it even worse, unfortunately. So the reflux will be worse because of that anxiety. So help your baby to relax. Relax yourself, help your baby to relax. Not easy, but possible. Okay, so we focus on little things, one at a time, just one feed at a time, not even one day at a time, just one feed at a time to make things better. So maybe you are feeling anxious because you know if your baby is going to be feeding soon and you know what's going to happen. Don't worry. Start listening to some audiobook, to some music, to some meditation, watch TV, watch a series on your mobile, whatever. Whatever helps you to relax. Okay, so that when you are relaxed, you are automatically being able to help your baby relax as well. Use a sitting up position to feed your baby. If your baby is upright, the more upright your baby is, the milk will go down in a better way, so that it helps have less severity in the reflux. Or you can use the laid back position, which is semi-reclined, and those are two positions which are really helpful with a reflux baby. After a feed, keep them at least 10 minutes upright again, ideally 15 to 30 minutes. But if that is not possible, at least 10 minutes, even if they are asleep, just do so, because it helps for the milk to go down easier. keeping them in a sling will help to keep them upright and for you to be able to carry on doing other things, right? Feeding short feeds often, it's much better than having one long feed and the baby is then crying a lot. So maybe you can have feeds every 30 minutes of 10 minutes each. It is much easier for the baby to handle than if you have a 20-minute feed and then the baby is really much more uncomfortable. Burping is also very helpful. So throughout the feed, stop the baby often to burp. So that also can reduce the effects of reflux. Important not to put in a car seat after a feed, because when we are putting them in a car seat, their stomach, their intestine, it gets all hunched up, and that makes it worse for the reflux baby. So if you need to go out, make sure that the baby doesn't need to feed before you are going out, because that will make her reflux worse. Actually not moving a lot after feed, so keeping the baby upright and not jiggling them and dancing them around, will help for the milk to go down without too much effort, and it helps to again to lessen the severity of the reflux episode at the time. What was I going to say next? Oh yes, this is something which I think I don't hear a lot of people talking about it, but I think it is very important. Actually, non-nutritive sucking, so comfort sucking, is actually very helpful for the comfort for the reflux baby, because it actually reduces the irritation quicker and speeds the emptying of the gastric. So I know a lot of parents might not feel comfortable with comfort sucking, but comfort sucking with the reflux baby may be very helpful, because it would help them to keep the irritation at a minimum. So I'm thinking to see if I left anything out. I don't think so. I think that is it. So yes, when it comes to reflux, first of all, check there is nothing else which is causing the reflux. If there is something causing the reflux, most of the time we can again sort it out, and therefore the reflux will eventually go. If we don't have any reason why, then managing the reflux is by helping the baby relax, feeding them upright, feeding often but short feeds, burping them often, keeping them upright for as much as possible after a feed, not putting them in car seat, no juggling them around after a feed. I think that's it. And obviously, if it is very severe, the doctor might give you some medication to help manage the symptoms. So reflux is not something, unless, as I said, there is an underlying condition why it's happening, reflux is not cured. It goes on its own. Normally, it goes on its own by the time a child is 1 year old, and it starts getting better with the introduction of solid foods. So sometimes, especially if the case is very severe, one might encourage the mother to actually start weaning earlier than 6 months. There might be medication which the doctor might prescribe to you, therefore, that will help manage so that the symptoms are less severe. Unfortunately, there haven't been a lot of studies on reflux and breastfed babies, and most doctors will automatically tell you to stop breastfeeding and go for a hypoallergenic milk. And while that usually, yes, does help also with the reflux, it's not really the solution, because we are not, we are keeping our babies from having the milk that was meant for them, right? So yes, doctors will most likely tell you to stop breastfeeding and give formula. There haven't been a lot of studies, so most doctors are not aware of how they can help a breastfeeding mother with a reflux baby, except for prescribing formula and giving medication. So it is very important when these things happen to seek the help and advice of a lactation professional so that they can guide you further. But as a general rule, this is what we will be helping you with as breastfeeding professionals and having a reflux baby. I hope this has been interesting for you. These were what I called the difficult questions from all that the mothers have asked a few weeks ago now. If there are further questions which you would like to have and that you'd like to, then please do ask, and I will answer them. Thank you, Maria, Katie, and Alexia, for your messages. I hope you all have a good day, and that is all from me for today. Bye.